Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to a brand new series of Secret Artists Podcast. I'm your host, Annie McGrath, and if you're new to the series, then it's basically comedians doing art. So each week I'm joined by a different comic slash actor and we chat whilst creating an artwork inspired by a subject of their choice. Funny, relaxing, insightful. I like it anyway. Past guests include Nish Kumar, Joel Dommett, Lolly Adefope, Nina Conti, Jenny Eclair, Phil Wang, Katie Wicks, Tom Allen, and loads more. So check it out. Check out past episodes on Spotify, Acast, or Apple Podcasts. But on with the first episode of Series 3! I'm very excited to be joined by Felicity Ward, an excellent comedian who stars in the brand new Australian drama Wakefield, which is out now on ABC if you're in Australia. It's just received 5 stars in The Guardian, and I'm hoping it'll be available to watch in the UK soon because the trailer looks so good. So in this episode, Felicity and I draw and paint each other over Zoom whilst chatting. There are a few heavy topics which we touch upon, like postnatal depression and mental health issues. Otherwise, we discuss Felicity's role in this huge Australian show and the challenges she faced through filming during a pandemic. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Secret Art Pod to see our artworks. And if you like it, then why not subscribe and leave us a nice little review? For now, though, enjoy the episode. Felicity Ward is a fantastic comedian and writer who has made numerous appearances on TV shows such as Live from the BBC, Live at the Apollo, Mock the Week, Russell Howard's Good News, Alan Davies' As Yet Untitled, The John Bishop Show, and The Stand-Up Sketch Show. She is also an excellent actor who has been in Roisin Conaty's sitcom Game Face, Josh Widdicombe's sitcom Josh, and The Inbetweeners 2 film. She is a regular on the Guilty Feminist podcast, and I'm very excited about having her on Secret Artists.
Hello,
hello, Felicity. How are you doing?
Good. It's how do you feel reading someone else's biography to their face?
I find it. It amuses me because I find it so awkward. But I find often people quite like it because they're like, "Oh, I have actually." Because obviously, being a comedian, we all have this like insecurity complex that we're all shit and haven't achieved anything. Mm. So I think sometimes it can be a nice reminder of how much you've done. I don't know if you feel it's, like that.
Well, it's also a thing, like you go to the States and they say, how do you want me to introduce you? And all the American actors, are like comedians are like, I did Conan. I did, you know, I've had my own Netflix special. And they've got their spiel.
Yeah.
You come to the UK and the MC asks you, how do you want to be introduced? You're like, well, I don't care.
Yeah.
I just don't say girl. I needed you to say. Don't say comedian and don't say girl.
Jack and I once had that. Someone asked us how we wanted to be introduced because we did the sketch duo twins. And we were like, oh, I don't know, just like say a sketch comedy act, whatever, I don't really mind. And he was like, your next act is a sketch comedy act. And that was it. It was like, no, but then you say what we're called. We didn't think that was, you know, necessary.
That's a given, right?
Yeah, surely. But yeah, lovely to have you here.
And lovely to see you. I was going to eat another cashew nut, but I just realized I think the sound of chewing is tolerable, maybe with a crisp where you go, oh, that's a crisp.
Yeah.
But cashews make you a bit gluggy.
Well, this is quite a sort of ASMR-y podcast because we'll be doing art. So there's lots of like different sounds. So if you want to be eating cashews,
shall I do my deep soothing voice with soft plosives?
Love that.
Thank you.
Are you, what's your experience of art? I don't really know if you've done much art as in like drawing and painting wise or.
Funnily enough, I was sort of, when I was looking for something to draw with, like just before, I've just got printer paper. I found this book and I forgot that I was like really into animation when I was. So I've got a Matt Groening book because I was a huge Simpsons fan.
Amazing. It's like,
so this is like from 1989 or something. And it's, it was funny at the time. I was like, ha, 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 this is so funny. But it's called Childhood is Hell. And it's really dark. It's like this kid who's in constant despair. And it's like a satirical look on being a kid, but it's actually very, very dark. And that was.
Are you going to read it to your son?
Absolutely not. When he's nine and feeling despairing.
Yeah.
But that I really got into sort of drawing Simpsons like cartoons when I was younger. And there's this dumb little dog that I've drawn. I don't know if you have a thing that you've drawn since you were a kid and you just that's your doodle.
Yeah, I think I always go for like flowers, which people say is sexual, but I don't. I think everyone has their just thing they do, like a pattern you draw or.
Yeah. I've got a leaf one that I draw that sort of looks like a softer version of the silver fern, which is the New Zealand national plant. I don't know, flora. And then with art, I did this I actually forgot this until I was talking to my husband about it last year. We had a subject at school in high school called commercial art. And it was the first year that it was offered. And it was like doing video game design and illustrating books and that kind of.
That's so sort of progressive.
Yeah, which is weird because it was a school that also tried to actively quash the drama department because they were very much a science, sport, and math school. That's what they were like a what you call a grammar school over here. So it's weird that they would introduce something so progressive. It was almost like a tech version of art.
Yeah.
And I really responded to that and really liked how that made my brain feel.
Yeah.
The thing that I usually do, because even before that, I've just remembered, my grandma's an artist. She's a painter.
And that's funny. Yeah, I just remembered.
Just remembered.
Oh, yeah, that. I've got a family of artists.
Yeah. My mum is Monet. Did you know that? No. Also, I know that he's he. That was the joke, just in case.
I got it.
Thank you. Grandma hasn't painted for years, but when we were really young, this is such an Australian story, there are places that you can pan for gold in Australia. So we went camping and we would, like, go panning for gold and not, you know, you'd get some fake gold, I think it's called.
Oh, those like little gold nuggets.
But it's not even, but it's not actually gold.
Yeah.
It's literally fake. Or you'd find quartz or stuff like that. And that was really cool too. But grandma would have these drawing competitions and she said, you know, whoever, it was just between my sister and I, and she'd say, let's draw this apple. And so she sort of taught me how to shade. And then she just happened to have my sister's favorite block of chocolate. And then the next day we'd have another one and she just happened to have my one. So my sister would win one, I'd win another one.
So she was fair about it.
She was fair. She wasn't like driving us away from each other. Like,
like she's going to really fuck one of you up.
Yeah, that's
getting
right.
Getting in your head about apples.
So that's my youngest memory of it being introduced to me, I suppose.
So did that make you more into it or was it like, did you find yourself getting competitive about the drawing?
No. And my sister and I, it's funny, we've shared different things. Like she went on to study art in high school and that was something that she was very interested in. She did it her last 2 years for school where for me it was something that I sort of like another creative element that I had where performing was much more my style.
Yeah.
But we never really talked about it. Again, she learnt guitar and I got hurt. She got lessons. She just wanted to make out with guys in bands. but she took lessons for a year.
It's a good strategy getting in.
It, It is. It's method acting.
Yeah.
But she taught me three chords, and then I still play guitar and she doesn't. So we never really, I don't, she was like a moody teenager and I was like an annoying teenager. Mm-hmm. So those two personalities didn't really like come together over art.
Yeah. Well, that's so nice though that you both had like various creative outlets that you could go to. So what should we draw? Should we draw one of the Matt Groening pictures? Actually, I'm going to paint. I've got some acrylics set up.
Oh, lovely. Well, I mean, we absolutely can. The thing is they're so simplistic.
Mm.
They're just single lines. The other thing that I wanted to – this is what I was thinking. When I'm – it's only been the last, like, couple of months that my husband found out that I can draw. We've been together for 7.5 years.
Oh, really?
And he just didn't know that I could put pen to paper, and he started drawing.
Yeah.
And so what I've always drawn is faces, because I love cross-hatching and I love shading. So I thought that we could just draw a face.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be anyone's in particular, or we could draw each other's face. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm up for
that. Is
that
too much?
No, I'm up for that if you are.
Okay.
So do you find drawing quite therapeutic?
The shading part I really do. When I – it's something that I can – it's that I do really mindlessly, but it feels – also the sound of pencils sound really good on paper. But it's – what I like seeing is something that's very simple and basic and being able to make it come to life. Often I start with the nose. I'm sure you've studied this, but there's just some very little tips that I've got over the years, and just a couple of them have stuck with me.
Yeah.
And so those parts of the face are usually really good, and then the rest of it's like, how do I shade a forehead?
I think faces are so hard. The only thing I ever learned about faces was that your eyes are actually halfway down your head, which I always found mental, because normally people do them too high up.
Yeah, so upsetting, right, that they're that high up. That's that's one of them. And also shading a nose, that you would do the nostrils and then like a 3/4 of a circle above that, and then you shade it as if you're shading a ball. So I could always do the tips of noses really good. The bridge of noses, absolutely fucked. Cannot do them to save myself. I've done your eyebrows too high.
Thanks.
So you're gonna look surprised.
I also think this is harder because we're front on to each other. Normally faces are a bit easier to draw on profile, aren't they?
Oh, you think? I think that it's just hard to, because we're not sitting still for each other.
Yeah, that's true.
That we're talking and moving. I mean, yeah, I've given you very animated proportions here.
Are we allowed to talk about the project you were working on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The trailer's just gone to air.
Oh, great.
So it's so exciting. And it was so hard for so many reasons. As you know, I had an 8-week-old baby when we went out. And it just felt like everything that could go wrong did go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like we landed and someone had stolen our bassinet off the plane. The driver wasn't there to pick us up. We got to the Airbnb. There was grease all over the house. There was rotting food in the kitchen. It was just like,
awful.
It was so upsetting. And this is after a 24-hour flight. And then like our air conditioning blew 3 days into being there, and it was during the bushfires.
Oh yeah.
They didn't fix it for 2 weeks. I kind of knew started to adjust to how to look after a baby in the cold. Looking after a baby in the heat is when you can't escape the heat.
Yeah.
It's hotter outside than it is inside, but inside you feel like you're cooking if you don't have aircon. So it was really, really traumatic. And then all of this other massive life stuff happened while we were there. Like an ex of mine died. Someone in our family
got.
Yeah, it was just like, I'm not trying to bring people down, but it was.
I'm so sorry. That's
if it
horrendous.
Was all in one. If it was in a TV show, you'd go, we get it. She's having a bad run, but this is
a bit extreme,
like, unrealistic.
Yeah, it needs to be a bit more believable.
Genuinely.
And this is all pre-pandemic, isn't it?
Yeah. So when the pandemic hit, I'm like, least of my problems, least of my problems. And I had postnatal depression. I had to see, like, I didn't have to see, but I was seeing a therapist out there. Mm-hmm. It was just wild.
Yeah.
So then the pandemic hit and we started to, I remember I did a TV spot for another show while I was there.
Mm.
And I remember getting the makeup done. And the TV was on and the news was like doing stories about the virus.
Yeah.
And the other comic who was on looked at me and said, do you reckon this is like one of those movies where we're all just sitting around being really casual and the world's about to implode and we don't know it? And I went, yeah, probably. And then the end of the next week, our production had to get shut down because we'd tried to social distance and we'd done everything we could, but it just wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
The Sunday night we got told it's done. Friday we got told, the Friday before we said we're going to do one more week, and then on the Sunday night they said we're not going ahead.
Quick little plug from me. I urge you all to watch Grave New World, a brand new comedy series which is available now on Amazon. It's a surreal take on a post-lockdown world created by former Secret Artists guest and producer of the podcast, Stuart Laws. I also pop up in the series alongside some excellent people like James Acaster, Sadia Azmet, and loads more. Watch it, review it, live, laugh, love it. It's a Turtle Canyon production and it is excellent, if I may say so myself.
So then my husband and I were like, oh, this is actually quite nice. We'll have a couple of weeks where we can go and see our family, which we're an hour and a half away, and we can relax and, you know, we'll go back in a couple of weeks. And so that afternoon, the production called and said, hey, when were you thinking about going back? And we said, probably in a couple of weeks. And they said, okay, if it's got to be sooner than that, what would work for you? And we're like, oh, you know, maybe in a week. And Frankie, our son, had to get his vaccinations that week.
Oh, right.
So the next day they called us and said, look, this is getting a little bit full on. Maybe if it's okay, we'll stick to Sunday because I don't think we're going to get a flight after that. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, you got like, sorry, just remembered you're getting like one of the last flights back or something.
Yeah, well, then they called again that afternoon and said, look, this isn't looking good and I think that you, do you have a contingency plan because we can't get you on a flight? And I was like, what? Fuck. They're like, do you have family you can stay with? Do you have, you know, what's your plan? And we're like, oh yeah, we could stay with family. And they're like, we think that's how it's going to go. We've got you on reserve, on standby for two flights. This is on the Wednesday. They actually said that. They said, we've got you on standby for a flight tomorrow and one on Friday, but the chances of you getting on are very, very unlikely.
Mm. So did you just have to have all your stuff packed and just be like, essentially ready to leave at any point?
Well, we didn't know. We were so exhausted because I was still breastfeeding through the night or we were still feeding through the night. Like this is – we still only have a – he was 4 months by that stage. That's still a very, very young baby. So on top of being exhausted from filming and being a mum for the first time, I sort of said, so should we pack? And they're like, I don't know.
Oh my God.
So we did like a little pack, right?
You just need someone to like tell you exactly what to do in that
just
situation.
Just tell me. Yeah. I absolutely cannot do anything. So then Thursday morning at 8:30 in the morning, they say, we've got you on a flight if you want it, but it's at 2 p.m. 4 p.m. this afternoon. So we'd have to pick you up at 1 p.m. Do you want it? And I sort of said, I'll talk to Chris and get back to you, and called like five minutes later. We took the flight. So that meant we had 4 hours to pack up a 3-bedroom house with all like cots, bassinets, all of our bottles, all of the toys that people had brought over. Our friends were so kind and so helpful.
Yeah.
And fortunately people from the show came over as well and helped us because we were off our face. We couldn't focus, let alone figure out what we needed to do. And then, we just packed up and left and got back here. And then I thought there's no way the show is going to get back up soon. But because Australia was so on top of things,
yeah,
I then had to go back out in July.
Wow.
And leave Frankie for 5 weeks. So that was full on.
Yeah, I bet. So they managed to finish, was it supposed to be like 2 months of the remaining shoot in half the time, basically?
Yes. So they just doubled up everyone's shooting. So I shot 3 weeks but had to be in quarantine for 2 weeks before that.
Okay. God, that must have been intense.
Oh, and one of the, like, there was people that had just made it over the border from Victoria into New South Wales because we were filming in New South Wales.
Mm.
And it was my friend's birthday and she said, let's just go out for dinner because we were all supposed to quarantine. She said, we'll just go out to this one restaurant. No one was going to restaurants or anything like that mm-hmm. from the cast because we were told we have to basically be in isolation while we're filming because there's so many people involved
yeah.
That we just can't afford to have anyone. So they just went out for one meal before shooting started.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, someone there had the virus 2 days before. There was a new case.
Fuck.
And so there was like a chance that they wouldn't be able to, that she wouldn't be able to film for like 2 more weeks. And then the government said, oh no, it's okay. It's only 1 day either side. We don't think it's 2 days either right. side that you are clear. So that ended up being fine. I'm sorry if I'm not making a lot of sense.
You're making total sense. Just can't get over shit show of a year it was.
Oh, Annie, it's just been unstoppable. Like, I can't.
I'm so glad you got to go out and finish the show though.
Me too.
That would have been infuriating. And what is it? Is it out only in Australia? It's a TV show, right?
It's a TV drama.
TV drama.
It's set in a psychiatric unit.
Mm-hmm.
So I had postnatal depression and was playing a psychiatric nurse treating people who had postnatal depression.
Perfect.
Hmm.
Did that help you feel?
It was wild. It was wild because it was actually an escape for me.
Yeah.
Acting was an escape for me because I didn't have to feel the pressure of the, because I just felt, as part of postnatal, I felt immense responsibility, immense pressure. I didn't take to it as naturally as I thought I would. I was mm-hmm. so ready to be a mum and I've always had really maternal instincts.
Mm-hmm.
But it just didn't, I wasn't prepared for the sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
And I wasn't prepared to give up what I thought, what I needed to, i.e. I had to abandon the idea of sleeping like someone who doesn't have a child.
Yeah.
Like going to bed at 11.
But it must be so hard, like even if you can logically understand that's what you have to do, it's such a physical thing and your body's just under such huge amounts of stress and pressure and you need sleep. It's not like you're being out of order of being like, oh, I miss sleep. It's like you literally have to sleep or you get unwell.
And I was going madder and madder, and so my idea was I would because he'd wake like 3 times in a night,
mm.
if I went to sleep at 11 or midnight,
mm.
then I'd probably only have to wake up once or twice before he was up for the day at 5 or 6. So I was getting like 4 hours sleep broken, if that, for I don't know how many weeks.
Yeah.
And I went mad, obviously. And then, I got the email for that audition when he was 12 days old.
Well, you obviously smashed it.
And the funny thing is, I thought there's no way I'm getting this part because I don't know who this character is. I read it and I'm like, it seems like there's bits all over. I couldn't put the different facets of her character into a sphere.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You know when they all make sense and you can roll it into like a beef patty and go, oh, this will make a burger. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could see egg and I could see mince and I could see breadcrumbs, but I couldn't like squish them together.
Yeah.
Not a vegan-friendly metaphor there.
but do you think that helped in a way with the character? Do you think they didn't have a clear idea or do you think it's just it's something that came to you when you did get the part?
We're at the table read. I was reading it and I'm like, oh, this is who she is. I know who this is.
Clicked into place.
Yeah. Like there was some bits of the audition that I was getting the character. I'm like, oh, this feels like it. And I think there was someone else who was up for the part as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've made you look like a goth and I don't know why. I'm sorry.
I've sort of increasingly made you look like a teenager.
All right. You look sad in this photo and this picture, and you're not meant to.
That's fine.
You don't look like this. Yeah, I didn't think I'd get the part, and then I got it, and we had a 5-week-old baby. And so then we spent the 3 weeks getting passports and getting visas, and I'm traveling across London with a baby, still not like fully physically recovered.
Yeah.
And not knowing that I've got postnatal, so my body feels like concrete at all times. And like lifting prams upstairs because there's no lifts anywhere. It's still,
yeah, it's
like
crazy. So isn't it like 30% of the tubes in London have accessibility, like lifts and ramps and stuff? It's really, really bad.
It's so insane. That's another thing where I got like with Australia, because we're a much newer country, or, you know, since white people invaded, there's no train stations that don't have a ramp, a lift.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't exist. So.
Well, I mean, that you'd think that should be the case in somewhere like London, but I don't know why it's taken so long.
But do you know what they say? They go, oh, because the trains are so old. You're like, they're not going to get any younger.
Mm.
Like they're like, oh, yeah, the platforms, you know, the stations are so old. You're like, well, you just need to figure it out because that's most people. You
need to put some money into it.
Yeah. Even when they redid Tottenham Court Road, they put in one lift. I'm like, what are you talking about? Where are you from?
Yeah.
Do you know how many people are in London and use Tottenham Court Road? You've seen people, right?
Yeah. But the people in charge of making the decisions probably don't get the tube, so.
No.
That's so cool, though. Congratulations. What a huge achievement,
mate,
during such an awful year. And how satisfying to watch it. Like, absolutely love it. I can't wait to see it. I hope I get the chance to see it.
Me too. So the director, they've got two directors.
Mm.
One director directed the first three episodes,
mm-hmm,
and the last two episodes, and then there's a different director who directs the 4, 5, and 6, the three middle episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Joss, who did 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, she directed, do you know the film The Dressmaker that Kate Winslet was in?
I don't think I've seen it, but it rings a bell.
And she directed How to Make an American Quilt. She produced Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Like,
wow, she's a big shot.
Yeah, she's like an iconic Australian director. Mm-hmm. And that was another reason that I did it, because I'm like, Jocelyn Morehouse is directing this? Even I've heard of her and I don't know anyone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
How have you found, the absence of live gigs and stuff? I guess it's been this year, the filming has fallen, you know, at the perfect time with no gigs and stuff. But have you missed it?
I've only missed it when I've done it. Once I've done it, I've gone, oh, my God, I missed this. I really love it. But because I didn't really get maternity leave because of the show,
mm-hmm,
I got a chance just to spend time with my bub again and, you know, us become really good mates.
Yeah.
Because it's because I absolutely loved him from the moment I saw him, but I didn't have the rush of oxytocin. Mm. Lots of women have, as soon as they see the baby or, you know, whoever is having the baby, as soon as they see their baby, they're overwhelmed with love. And I didn't have that. I was like, oh, he's here. We've been waiting. Like that's, yeah. This is my new little mate. And because I was so stressed out for those first couple of months, I got time to, for him to get to know me and know that, and for him to know that I love him. You know, like when yeah. we're in Australia, my husband would walk in the room and my bubba's face would just light up. Like he couldn't believe his luck every time he saw his dad. Aww. And then with me, it was like I'd put on a 5-star show, just like a full pantomime, and I'd get a corner of the mouth going, hmm. I'm like, what? You just laughed at your dad just looking at you.
Yeah.
I'm doing dancing.
You're trying too hard.
I'm trying too hard.
Got to play hard to get. That must be quite hard, though.
It was. It really was. Not that I wanted him to love his dad any less. Like, I was delighted, and it's so beautiful watching a baby just go, you? Mm. I get to see you again. That's an amazing feeling. Mm. But yeah, it's really hard going, am I going to get better at this? Is he going to like me more at some point? Am I doing something wrong? The weird thing is when you've given birth to the baby is that you have such an inextricable link that even from the time they're conceived, well, and you know, once they have receptors and nerves, but they are for the first, you know, for the most of pregnancy and then the first 6 months, whatever you're feeling, they're feeling. They're so perceptive. Yeah. If you're stressed out about breastfeeding, which is completely normal, then they will be stressed out about it. They know there's something wrong and they don't know why.
I feel like I read somewhere, and this might be totally untrue, so please correct me if I've misunderstood, but that stress hormones can be passed on through breastfeeding.
I think so. That it wouldn't surprise me at all.
I feel like I read that somewhere, but it's one of those things that, like, it sounds true, but could be a load of bullshit.
I think that that's true. And, like, you know, what the advice is, you know, the more you relax, the more baby relax and you'll be bonded. And you're like, that's the most stressful thing to hear.
Yeah.
That your baby's temperament, current temperament, is reliant on you being relaxed when you're not sleeping and you have the most responsibility you've ever had in your life.
It's very stressful advice. Just don't be stressed.
Yeah, it's like telling an anxious person, you know, if you relax, you won't feel anxious. Yeah. You're like, yeah, I know.
Or like, don't be nervous.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't thought of that. Thanks.
God, and it must have been difficult as well at a time where you can't, like, meet up with other people and discuss, like, other new mothers and discuss how you're all feeling about things, because I'm sure what you're feeling isn't unusual and so many people must go through that. But I imagine it's difficult when you're not able to have the conversations with people.
And also, like, when you have depression, you don't want to see people anyway.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, I loved that I couldn't see people because I felt – that's what I want to do. I want to isolate. I don't want to tell people my problems because it's weird and I'm doing fine. And I didn't want to share, you know, my NCT group, they're so, like, they're such a great bunch of parents. Mm-hmm. But I didn't feel like it was the right place to say, I'm really struggling with postnatal. I feel dark, isolated. Because I met these people for 3 days on a weekend.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember this is like one of my lasting memories of having a new baby. It was New Year's Eve and everyone was dressing up their babies and like taking photos. And I'm like, how do you have the space in your mind and emotionally to dress your baby up? Like, aren't you just figuring out how to feed yourself?
Yeah.
Aren't you figuring out how to fit a shower in? They just seemed like they were coping so much better than me.
What were they dressing up the babies as?
Oh, just putting like a hat on them that had 2020 or, you know, like. But like they're like, oh, we're having a glass of wine. And I'm like, aren't you fighting? Aren't you saying you go to sleep now and I'll get this? Or because Frankie had colic as well, which means they cry for a minimum of 3 hours a day up to, for a minimum of 3 weeks. And we were at week six by that stage and he was still doing it.
Mm.
And that went on until he was like 3.5 months. But I remember one of the mums on the group saying, hey, does anyone have a good casserole recipe? And I just thought,
fuck off.
Well, just like I started crying because I thought, you have time to read recipes? You have the emotional space to think about the future beyond this second? I just felt so overwhelmed.
Mm.
And, I couldn't open up to them. Now I've met a couple of mums at nursery. We've been texting each other, messaging each other. They're like, how are you going? I'm like, pretty shit, actually. I just figured, like, I have to be honest, otherwise I might die.
Yeah.
Like that, it feels that important.
I also feel like it just takes one person to actually say how they're really feeling. And then suddenly, yeah. I bet you've had other people now confiding in you how they've been feeling as well.
Yeah. And that's always been my experience with anything mental health related too. Yeah. That whenever I say, oh, yeah, I've got anxiety and depression, you see some people's eyes widen. They're like, oh, she knows.
Yeah, it's okay to talk about it.
Yeah, it's safe. I can't tell you how little this looks like you, by the way.
This doesn't look like you at all. No. It looks like a person, but it definitely doesn't look like you.
No, not at all.
Okay. Going back to sort of anxiety and depression, I know it's something you've spoken about a lot in your stand-up.
She's banged on about it, Annie. She has banged on about it.
Do you think there's a connection between comedy or people who do comedy and anxiety, or do you think it's just...
No, I think that it just seems so juxtaposed. It seems so contradictory that people who are, have chosen a job that... is supposed to make you laugh, that they could feel bad, that to an outsider it seems impossible. It seems like an impossible combination. Mm. That I know shy comedians seems probably impossible to most people. And when I first started, I'm like, how could you do this if you're shy? I didn't know because I'm an extrovert. But it's an outlet and it's an expression, like art is, I suppose.
Mm.
Well, no, it is. So I just think that, one, it seems contradictory to the job description, and a terrible choice for ourselves. but two, because we also have a platform to then talk about it.
Yeah.
I made a documentary about mental illness years ago, probably 7 years ago now in Australia.
Mm.
And in construction in Australia, construction workers are 6 times more likely to die from suicide than any other work-related injury. So they're not comedians, but there's different, you know what I mean? There's different pressures and structures in each industry that mean that they are more prone to it. But having said that, they're not more prone to depression, I don't think, but they're more prone to suicide because of the machismo involved in the environment that they work, that there's a lot of middle management bullying that is part of the culture. And what you have when you go from school, you have a very coddled environment. It's very structured. You know, you get lunch is here and, you know, recess is here and you know what's on at the canteen and you know this teacher and it's all very ordered for you.
Yeah.
And then when you train to have a trade in Australia, it's very high overheads, like buying a car that can facilitate your tools. You've got to buy your tools. And then also to study, you get paid very, very terrible wages as an apprentice for 3 or 4 years. So you've got high overheads. You've got a lot of pressure, financial and emotional from the cultural environment. And so often they're, you know, culturally very similar in Australia as the UK, that men stereotypically don't have outlets where they can buffer this their pain, where they can have conversations about it that stops it from going further. Mm. So they often turn to, they can turn to alcohol, they can turn to gambling, they can turn to things that actually create more pressure, and then it can take something as simple as a breakup.
Yeah.
And they go straight to 100 because they've been holding the pressure, holding the pressure, holding the pressure, and then they just explode and they don't have, they're not given this solutions or tools, emotional tools to help mitigate that along the way.
So sad, isn't it? But do you think that's changing?
I think it is. That I mean, the people that I slow, like all changes, but the people that we were speaking to, they're called Mates in Construction, and what they do is they literally go from worksite to worksite, give a half-day seminar and talk about the rates of suicide, and then they set up a like a structure within the site. So they have someone who they can go and talk to if they're struggling, if they've got emotional or financial or mental health issues that they're struggling with, they can go to that person. They're like a point man on site. And then further, they train people for like suicide first aid. Mm. They're trained what to do to look for signs. They're trained what to do if someone makes an attempt. If someone does take their life, if they do suicide. Actually, I'm trying to remember what the correct wording is. I think it's suicide. Died by suicide.
By suicide, yeah. I think.
Died by suicide, yeah. So if they died by suicide, they then know how to deal with it on site in the aftermath as well. So they're an incredible organisation.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's you know that there's like three countries in the world where women have a higher suicide rate than men. It's all men.
Mm. I feel all of it should be really like tackled in schools, shouldn't it? I think.
It's maybe it is now. It's a fucking international emergency.
Yeah.
Men die like three times the rate of women in most cases. I'm pretty sure most countries men are dying at three times the rate by suicide than women.
Yeah, and young men as well.
Yeah, I think it's 25 to 40 are the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any favourite artists?
Look, I'm pretty mainstream. Mm. I really love Salvador Dali.
Yeah, he's great.
I went to... There's a desert in... it's in South America. I think it's in Chile.
Yeah.
And it's where the persistence of memory, the backdrop is from.
Is that the melting clock one?
The melting clock one, yeah. I couldn't believe I remembered the persistence of memory. Yeah, I usually call it the melting clock.
The melting clock piece. One.
So you know how that's desert in the background?
Yeah.
Well, I went to the desert where that's where it is. And it's got such an eerie quality about it. The shadows look drawn on. They don't look real. It's, it's wild.
Yeah.
So I really love that style. And I went to his museum Spain. And it's one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. It was just like they have the Mae West room where you walk in and it just looks like a bedroom that's been decorated in beautiful colours and gold, and it's, you know, very sort of opulent. But then you walk up a little set of stairs and there is a huge magnifying glass or a fisheye lens rather, and you look into the room and it makes Mae West's face, so that the base of the footer of the bed looks like it's just some red sort of fountains going away from each other. But when you look through the glass, they're the top of Mae West's lips.
Yeah, I remember that. Isn't there a sofa as well that's the Mae West lips? It's like bright red.
Yeah. Or maybe it's a sofa at the end of the bed.
I can't remember. Yeah.
And then there was like this, they had a garden courtyard, and there's this piece that's a car that's full of plants and a concrete naked woman who's chained to the front, standing on top, and she's sort of shackled to the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you, the Mae West room, if you can Google that. In the museum? Yeah, that's it.
Oh, yeah. So the picture frames make up the eyes.
Yeah, the picture frames are the eyes. but when you're not looking at it.
And the curtains from the hair.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It's really cool. So, yeah, and what happened, that's right, there's two mannequins inside the car and the car just fills up with water and then empties again and then fills up with water and empties again. And it's just, I've just that's never amazing. Seen anything like it. It was so mad. The whole thing was so mad.
Yeah.
And I just loved it. I loved that I wasn't looking at something that I was supposed to enjoy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's just sort of surprising and interesting rather than
critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
That was a huge epitome I had with art, where I always thought that I had to enjoy it and that I was missing something. I always felt really dumb when I went to museums and galleries. Mm-hmm. And then I had a big life change when I was like 27 and I left my partner and I stopped drinking and I had to move back in with my mum. And I got this opportunity to travel overseas for work. And so I just made it around the world trip. And so I went to Spain as part of that. It was after my first Edinburgh that I only went as a punter. Mm-hmm. I went to New York before that. And I was standing outside the MoMA and I said to myself, okay, Felicity, you're going to buy a ticket. You're going to go in. If you're bored, you're going to leave. You don't have to spend a certain amount of time in there. Yeah. I had to have that conversation with myself because I didn't go to university and I've always really been caught in two worlds where I grew up really working class and pretty poor, mm-hmm. But I always had a thirst for knowledge and I always had a curiosity for the world and I was too artsy-fartsy for where I grew up. But then when I went into an artsy-fartsy world, I felt too working class.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I still get it when I'm around really rich people. I feel like they can smell it on me, you know, that my mum collected coupons.
I do think everyone has that insecurity about, like, going into museums and galleries, though. Even people you might consider to be, like, knowledgeable or of the right class or whatever.
Yeah.
I find most people I've spoken to on the podcast have been like, yeah, I don't really know what I'm talking about. Like everyone prefaces chatting with like, oh, I don't really know anything about. And then of course, like everyone knows basically what they like and what they, you know, what they're drawn to. But I think there's this pressure to be like, to know about history of art or.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I know what I'm talking about, but people think I do.
Yeah, I feel like if you have a talent in the area, then you can talk about it because you at least have your experience of it.
But then everyone has their experience of it. And I feel like in lockdown it's been quite revealing how everyone from all different backgrounds have been drawn to creativity and making even the NHS rainbows on the window.
Like everyone
has,
you're right.
You know, been creating as a way of escaping.
Yeah. Well, I tell you that time that I went into MoMA, I ended up staying there for 4 hours.
Really?
Because they had a pop art exhibition on and it was just, you know, like I can remember the times that I have been so affected by a gallery. Mm. So that was one of them. The Salvador Dali Museum was another one. Another one I was doing... So the Melbourne Comedy Festival has something called Roadshow for people that don't know, and it is after the comedy festival has finished, they send two tours going around Australia to smaller towns and cities that wouldn't otherwise get comedy or that just get a taste of the comedy that's been at the festival this year.
Mm.
So I was in Canberra and had a day to burn, so I went to the National Gallery there and they had a soft sculpture exhibition and it blew my mind. I could not believe every single piece. Like I still feel it when I think about when before you walked in, the piece that was outside, they had two pieces outside in the foyer.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was a lily, mm-hmm. and it was made of essentially lilos, like a floating lilo. Wow. So it was made of that plastic material and it would all of a sudden air would be pumped into it and it would blow up to stand up like a proper lily and it would look incredible. And then it would take about 20 seconds to deflate and you just watch this flower deflate and then it would stand to attention again and it just was mesmerizing.
Oh, yeah.
And then across from it was they'd built a fake wall off the wall so it looked like a piece of the wall had been pulled out and then they had these oversized pills of all different shapes and colors that were very pop arty.
Yeah. Like
they were really bright colors but it was – they were just spilling out onto the floor. They were pouring out of the wall and onto the floor. And then there was another piece inside that were these two enormous walls that were made of plastic bags. So you'd walk through it and it would sort of suffocate you. It would stick to you because of the natural, you know, when you rub your head with a
balloon. Yeah, like
balloon.
The static energy.
The static, yeah. So it would sort of stick to you and you'd feel like you were being touched by someone, but it was a bag and it was all the way along. And then there was another piece that was just like a huge piece of what's the material that I'm thinking of? Oh, God, I can't think of it. It's like hard wax, like lacquer, but not. They looked like two massive slices of toffee.
Amazing.
But they were really heavy and they were suspended from the roof. And even the slightest movement, you'd see them like wave in the breeze. And you could feel the weight when they moved, when just by looking at them. I can still remember like so many pieces. This is the last one I'll talk about. But this person had knitted all the different human organs and they were suspended from the roof. And you went into a room and they just had like single light bulbs hanging from the ceiling as well. So you just saw the shadows all around the room of these like comical knitted kidneys and throats and, you know, lungs. You'd see them then shadowed on the wall. It was.
That sounds really cool.
You know, when it's like discovering a genre of music that you've never heard of, you're like, Tibetan throat singing? Okay. I didn't know this was a thing and I love it.
So you like quite sort of immersive, like almost performative art, like even the Dali room, it's like you're in the face, aren't you?
Yeah.
The Mae West room, sorry.
I suppose they're the ones that affected me the most.
But
I think it's probably just because it's the presentation is so original where I've seen – lots of incredible photos. I've seen lots of incredible artworks hung on walls. But when you're walking through a plastic bag wall and you're having a physical and emotional experience just from walking, I think that that's really incredible art.
Definitely.
In any, you know, when you see a show, a comedy show or a piece of theatre and you're laughing so hard you can't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, what's happening? Why is this happening?
Yeah.
And that's the power of art. Like it's, I think as a comedian, it's really tricky to talk about it respectfully and to talk about it seriously. Like comedy is an art form. Mm. But if someone's making you laugh so hard you can't breathe and all you're doing is watching them, that's something that's really powerful.
Oil or watercolour?
Oh, water.
Portrait or landscape?
Portrait.
Can you separate the art from the artist?
Oh, I find that very difficult. I'm a hypocrite sometimes.
Yeah. Tortured artist or rational doctor?
Rational doctor, because I can't have a conversation with a tortured artist. It's very boring.
Edinburgh Fringe or Melbourne Comedy Festival?
Edinburgh Fringe.
Don't
tell them.
Talk about or think about art?
Talk about.
Sydney or London?
Sydney.
Looking at a painting close up or far away?
Close up.
Private view or view of privates?
Oh, private view.
Painting from life, landscape or still life?
Life, landscape or still life. Life.
Pooing or weeing yourself?
Oh, weeing. Much easier clean up.
You'd be surprised how many.
Yeah, no.
A couple of people have, weirdly.
Was it Lou Sanders? I just think it's Lou Sanders.
I think it was Fern Brady.
Oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense as well.
Art or tech?
Art.
Art or food?
Food.
Art
no,
or book?
Art.
Art or books?
Books.
And finally, is what you do art?
Yes.
Oh, no, wait, actually, that's not the finally. The finally is dicks or pussies.
Oh, I mean, pussies are better, but I like dicks.
Thank you very much. I love it because it's sort of like caricature-y, but it's also realistic. And I love the plant you've done in the background. I love the shading. I think it does look a bit like me.
Do you? Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
It's sort of your eyes are too small. Like your eyes are much bigger on your face in real life. And I've given your cheeks I've made it so that it looks like your cheekbones go in when actually you've got, you don't have that decrepit face of like, you don't look wizened like I've drawn you.
No,
I don't think
you've drawn me wizened. I think it's, good. It's nice. Wilfred Wood.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? So they're like the portraits, they have like the essence of the person, but the features are a bit closer together. That really reminds me of your piece really reminds me of that.
Hmm. Yeah, I absolutely see why.
I love it. Okay, mine's a bit wet. Oh, thanks. And I've made you look a bit like a librarian. But...
Oh, wow.
Can you see it?
You're amazing, Annie. So do I describe it to people? It looks, it does look forlorn, but it looks like I'm deep in thought about like a lost love or that my library's burnt down.
Yeah.
And what I don't understand about painting is I do not understand colors. I don't know how to put them together. That's why I just work with pencils. But I think it's just beautiful, Annie. I think it's amazing. Thanks. Oh, you're so talented.
Yeah, it doesn't look like you at all, but
it looks like me in like 15 years.
Yeah, it's not a kind. I think it's because it's hard to draw eyes open, isn't it? So I went for the eyes shut, which makes you
looking
look
down
way more forlorn.
Yeah, yeah.
There we go. Oh, that's been really fun. Thank you so much.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Oh my God, I feel so honoured that you've painted me.
Well, thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed that. If you want to see mine and Felicity's artworks, then check out @secretartpod on social media. Make sure you're following Felicity too. She's on Twitter and Instagram @FelicityWard. Makes sense. It's her name. I'm on Twitter @AnnieMcTweet and on Instagram @McGrath.Annie or @McGrath.Art for my art. We'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, hope you're all doing okay. Keep drawing, keep painting. Keep putting one foot in front of the other. Thanks for joining us. Bye. Secret Artists is a Turtle Canyon comedy production for Acast. Music by Alistair Clayton. Quickfire Round music by Steve Dunn.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.